The news over the weekend that a 19-year-old Somali-American man, a naturalized citizen of the United States, was plotting a terror attack in Portland, plotting to bomb a Christmas tree lighting ceremony, distressed and concerned many members of that community.
It was a mixture of disgust and just shock. You know, it was sickening both as an American to know that my country was being attacked, and as a Muslim who believes in the Messiah, and we've been actively advocating for peace for over 120 years, and to know that in our own backyard, somebody who claims to be a Muslim would implement such a horrific plan made me sick to my stomach.
Maybe it's not as simple as that, though. Maybe 19-year-old Somali-American Mohammed Osman Mohammed was entrapped by the FBI, led by the hand toward that attempted bomb attack. That's what his defense is arguing in any case. And joining us now to give us the details is Richard Pildes. He's a professor of constitutional law at New York University. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you, Celeste.
Well, again, the attorney, and probably not very predictably, attorney Stephen Wax says that his client, Mohammed Osman Mohammed, was actually set up by federal officials. Here's the attorney.
One of the issues that we'll be looking into in this case is the question of entrapment. In the affidavit, in the government's own words, that the government provided money, the government was involved in transportation, the government was involved in meetings at which various things were discussed.
Okay, so maybe you can explain to us, Richard Pildes, the difference between a sting, as the government calls it, and entrapment.
Well, the basic test is whether the government is taking somebody who is already predisposed to commit the crime. And the government may have evidence of that from conversations it's wiretapped or actions the individual's taken. If the person is already predisposed to commit the crime, then the government's permitted to provide, you know, opportunity, to provide methods. But what the government cannot do is take somebody who's innocent and sort of put the idea of the crime in their head and kind of create the whole crime. So that's basically the test. It's kind of a subjective test. Was this person already predisposed to engage in the kind of criminal activities that are involved?
Well, but what is that measure for predisposition? Does that mean that Mohammed Osman Mohammed maybe went on Google and searched for how to make a bomb? Does it mean he went on some forum somewhere and expressed sympathy with other Muslim extremists? Does that constitute predisposition?
It would have to be predisposition to commit a crime, not just sort of, you know, abstract ideas. So, for example, if there were conversations in which he said, "I want to kill Americans. I'm trying to get, you know, in contact with people who can, you know, show me how I can do it." You know, if he's reached out and made contact with people, perhaps before the government got involved in the operation at all. If he's contacted people who are tied to, you know, violent jihadist operations, things like that. Some, you know, concrete steps that indicate he's, you know, looking to commit a crime, not just that he has abstract ideas.
You know, I was reading responses to a newspaper article today from a lawyer in which he said, look, the fact that his lawyers are bringing up the issue of entrapment means that they're desperate. And I wonder if that's true.
Yeah, I think in the criminal justice area, you know, we tend to think of entrapment as a defense of last resort for defendants, because you basically are admitting that you've done everything the government has accused you of doing. And what you're saying is, but I wouldn't have done it if the government had not sort of led me down this path. So, you know, you're not saying they have the wrong person. You're not saying I didn't do this or I didn't do that. You're saying, yes, all of that's true, but you ought to let me off nonetheless. So that's why it's usually thought of as a defense of last resort.
Stepping back from the legal doctrine for a moment, Richard Pildes, I mean, you know, just looking at it from the standpoint of, you know, a poor slob like me who's wondering if this investment is actually protecting me at all, how do I evaluate that? I mean, on the one hand, we could say if they overwhelm and flood the zone with all these sort of paid informants, that anyone who tries to put a plot together will never know who to trust. And so that may shut things down. But some of the characters who've emerged make me feel like, you know, this is really the Keystone Cops here.
Well, you know, the problem in an area like terrorism, and this is true to some extent with drug crimes as well, is that these are often operations that, unless the government puts informants in there, You don't find out about what's going on until it's too late. Obviously, the government doesn't want to wait until one of these episodes actually occurs. So in, I think, two-thirds of the major terrorism prosecutions, the government has used undercover informants of various sorts. There's always the risk that, you know, you're actually taking people who would not be committing crimes and, as I say, sort of leading them down this path. So what we'd want to know is exactly what this guy did, what he said, what his actions were, what he was prepared to do that led the government to, you know, focus on him and start putting the sting operation together.
Which means looking at what his predisposition was. But I wonder, yeah. Richard Pildes of New York University, is this maybe a response to the difficulties that the government has had with civilian trials? You know, when you have a defendant who's acquitted of all but, you know, one charge against them, maybe they go extremely the other way, leading them all the way up to the point where they push the button on that thing that they think is a bomb.
No, to be honest, I don't really think there's much relationship there. I mean, I think this is typically the way law enforcement's going to work with domestic people and the concern about terrorism, that if they have substantial evidence, and I don't know what the evidence was here, that someone is a risk, a threat, they're going to go in there and try to preempt that threat by, you know, kind of leading the person down a path that's going to provide strong evidence that there's criminal activity involved. But this is, the government would be doing this before or after these trials. It would be doing this before or after the debates about civilian courts. This is fairly standard law enforcement technique for these kinds of risky crimes or threats of crime.
That's Richard Pildes, professor of constitutional law at New York University. He's talking about the case against a 19-year-old Somali-American man accused of plotting an attack in Portland.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.